your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Our chance, we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make the heaven the middle of it. Rest make the heaven the middle. We are. Rest make the middle of it.
Right on schedule. The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Charlotte Littlefield is off tonight. Our guest for the first hour, I want to thank him again, Bill Blunden. Thank you very much for being with us and telling us a lot about cyber security and cyber warfare and the inflation of that real idea, that basic idea. The name of that book was Behold a Pale Farce, F-A-R-C-E. But again, thanks for sitting in with us and telling us about your book. It's a really fine book. I recommend it to everyone. We've got really a week here that... of course, the week before that, we had the Bundy Ranch, you know what I mean, standoff out in Nevada. And thank goodness nothing major happened there, no violence. The BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, decided to retreat out of that particular situation. But we've had some things that have occurred since then. We've had accusations by Harry Reid that those people were domestic terrorists and all kinds of things like that. And then also what's interesting since then is that Glenn Beck has picked up on this, but in a very negative way. He's not, you would think that with all the exposés that he did with Fox and so forth, that he'd be on the side of the Patriots, but not this time. In fact, his rhetoric and propaganda, and that's basically what he's evolved into, is talking points out of Media Matters or the White House even. He's just mimicking these attacks on those people that went out there and helped Cliven Bundy defend himself from this intrusion. And it was an intrusion. Now, what has happened also that has muddled the water a little bit is that there was a video interview, and it was outed that Cliven Bundy said some things about the blacks being better off possibly under slavery than today, and they're enslaved by this system. But they were taken out of context. When you go back and listen to what he said in the proper context, in the total context, he was making a statement that many people have said before, and I'm not apologizing for him. The man is of another era, another generation or two, so he's going to look at things a little different. So that did muddle the waters, and it tainted a little bit of the support. It discouraged, I think, some of his supporters from being wholeheartedly 100% behind him, and they're a little bit, he fell off, he lost some support because of those statements. Whether they were well-intentioned, they seemed to be well-intentioned, but of course the liberal press took them, New York Times, and just, you know, plastered it all over the place that he was a racist and things like that. In fact, he has a man working for him out there that's a black man that's one of his guards out there, and he was on Alex Jones' show recently and spoke very well of Cliven Bundy and the whole family. They sit down and break bread together and so forth. So Cliven Bundy is not a prejudiced person, but you know, he was making a statement saying, well, the blacks were under slavery, had their families and so forth, but now they're broken up and, you know, things have changed. That doesn't excuse the fact that they are free men today, even though they are controlled and on the government, you know, welfare. So, but a lot of people are too. It's just not blacks. I mean, you got whites out there that are on the government payroll. So, that are taking all these different, benefits and so forth. So anyway, that's so much for that. We're going to get into some other things also here that just came out this week. Out of the Clinton Library, there was a communication memo. It's called Communication Stream of Conspiracy Commerce. Who's behind this? The media food chain. The Washington Post story. It was about the time that they sent Ambrose Evans Pritchard in there to do a hatchet job on President Clinton. And then you had the Vince Foster things, but Joseph Farrar, WorldNet Daily, was mentioned in there when he was with previous publications before he started WorldNet Daily. So we're going to make that available. It's a PDF file. We'll make it available off our site for download. But it talks about all the different people and how they're using these different media operations to filter in. Here's what they're saying: the internet influence, the Whitewater, Vince Foster homepage, communications, the net between congressional Republicans and right-wing conspiracy theory proponents, New York Times article. This came out in 95, by the way, and it was recently released out of the library there. They're saying that there were articles, New York Times, Washington Post, San Diego, Washington Post, and so forth. Joseph Farrar is mentioned in there quite a bit. The fact sheet on Scarfe, hotline on Scarfe, and Foster, and New York Times editorials, and so forth. But the Clintons were trying to do some, salvaging in there of what was going on, and there was just scandal. The whole Clinton thing was scandalous, to say the least. But anyway, it's a very interesting thing, and I would suggest that you go in there and download that off of our site. Another download I'm going to make available is the Testing Theories of American Politics, Elites, Interest Groups, and Average Citizens. And I basically, that's coming in out of Northwestern University. And it's saying that, yeah, the money buys everything. I mean, majoritarian pluralism, the roots of what we can characterize as theories of majority. And they're just saying that the public doesn't really have a say. But we'll make that available also. And then there's also something else that happened on March 27. A Cass R. Sunstein he launched his book, of all places, at the National Constitution Center there on the Independence Mall. Anyway, he debuted there at the Constitutional Center, of all places, and he's as unconstitutional as you can get. This guy's way out of there. He was trying to infiltrate the 9/11 truth. You know, that was one of his proposals on another paper, a previous paper. He's going to come in there and infiltrate the 9/11 and break it up and all this. But now this Glenn Beck stuff, this turn of events here, especially on the Bundy Ranch, is showing many people that Glenn Beck is a Judas goat, and he's just leading people along, and a very large audience at that, and he's just leading them along. And I've been on to him for quite a bit. I do listen to him because it's interesting. You've got to know what these people are talking about and where they're headed, see. But he has a large, I first encountered him directly when we were down in San Antonio and Alamo Plaza. There was a big rally there that was put on by the San Antonio Tea Party. He got up there and ranted and raved and, you know what I mean, had a tremendous crowd there of about 16,000 people. But right now, it's looking like, he's really, the problem with him is he's really good at what he does. He'll put 75-80% of very, very good information out of there, but the spin, you got to watch it. This guy is a spin medicine man, premiere. He'll squash up a flag on the stage and say he's hemorrhaging the blood. You know what I mean? The country's bleeding to death, and he's hemorrhaging, and he's gonna stop the bleeding. You know, or he gets up here at Cowboy Stadium up there, you know, and gets a big full house, and he puts out the Christian thing a lot. See, so he's got a lot of well, you know, intentioned Christian following him. But let me tell you, well intentioned Christians, you need to wake up to this guy. This guy is about as false as you can get in the end. He's not coming across on 9/11 Truth at all. He's mimicking now the party line, you could say, the White House line, the Media Matters and all that, directly out of the White House. And so he's not going to come across in a real good fashion or an honest fashion. So that's something to keep in mind as we move along. The other things that were very interesting this week, want to make a point here about big data, okay? And big data is awful important in the fact that it's what it is basically, okay, is that when you're talking about big data, okay, what we've had in the past, okay, have been databases, okay? But the databases have not been on the size of what they're calling big data now. The data sets are so large and complex that it's difficult to process using the existing online database management tools or traditional data processing applications. See, and what you have is the challenges right now would be like how to capture this information. See, Google and NSA and all of these big enterprises, Facebook, they're out there capturing more data, but they don't always have the tools to correlate and relate and associate and make sense of all this information they have. But the challenges are would have to do with capturing it, curating it, and then storing it, and then search and sharing and transferring analysis and visualization. Those are the real challenges: capture, curation, storage, search, sharing, transfer, analysis, and visualization. Now these are big challenges for the people that are working in this area. Right now, what we have is that we have a tremendous research vehicle underway now. A vehicle in the form of the big data family is born. And this was an article in October. And I'm going to read a little bit of it verbatim here. It came out of the UK, okay? And it had to do with this big funding operation over there called the Economic Social Research Council, okay? Anyway, it says here, David Willetts, MP, Minister for Universities and Science, speaking at the prestigious Mountbatten Memorial Lecture last night, announced the recipients of the first phase of the Economic and Social Research Council's £64 million funding. So that'd be about $92 million of funding of investment in big data. Four new innovative administrative data research centers and a data service will strengthen the UK's competitive advantage in big data. And it goes on, the centers and service together form the administrative data research network, which will enable research based on linked data between government departments and be overseen by a single governance structure that will allow for consistent and robust decision making. Well, UK citizens, you're coming under the thumb of big, big government. 1984, George Orwell's right here, right in your backyard. Now, that $92 million was announced, like we said, on the 10th of October of 2013. There's danger in all of this big data. Been an important book, okay? That's been written by Victor Mayer Schoenberger and Kenneth Zucker, okay? They're both UK based, okay? And here's what they say about the dark side of big data. Their book that's just been recently published is called Big Data, A Revolution That Will Transform How We Live, Work, and Think. Okay? Now, here's what they say about the dark side of big data. As we have seen, big data allows for more surveillance of our lives while it makes some of the legal means for protecting privacy largely obsolete. It also renders ineffective the core technical method of preserving anonymity. Just as unsettling, big data predictions about individuals may be used to, in effect, punish people for their propensities, not their actions. You get that? So they're going to go out here looking for us and punish us for our propensities or what we might have a propensity to do, but not our actions. This denies free will and erodes human dignity. At the same time, there is real risk that the benefits of big data will lure people into applying the techniques where they don't perfectly fit or into feeling overly confident in the results of the analyses. As big data predictions improve, using them will only become more appealing, feeling an obsession over data since it can do so much. That was the curse of McNamara and is the lesson history holds. That was the body count that McNamara had during as defense Secretary of Defense during the Vietnam War. Give me the body count. That's all he wanted. We must guard against over-reliance on data rather than repeat the errors of Icarus, who adored his technical power of flight but used it improperly and tumbled into the sea in the next chapter and so forth. Anyway, that's what those two gentlemen, authors of Big Data, A Revolution That Will Transform How We Live, Work, and Think. We're going to have those people on the air as soon as we can. But anyway, in conjunction with this, and I started digging down into these some of these same individuals and what they were connected to, we have over there what has been launched also, okay, is a conspiracy. And, okay, listen to this. The United Kingdom, okay, has been the center for a tremendously razor sharp, you could say, mind control system of rule, okay? When you go back in time and you begin to see what they put on the table, they launched the company, which was called the British East India Company. When you go back and you see what that was all about, and then you begin to see the Bank of England following 1694, and that's where they started gaining control and monopoly over money creation. And then you have to go even further back in the Middle Ages, what was very rife in England, so forth, were the secret societies and the Knights Templar and all these others. And what they did was, what really happened, I must say, back then, is that you had a change in the politics of the United Kingdom over in Britain. When the launch of the British East India Company occurred in 1600, it just didn't occur with one establishment of one corporation and boom, that was it. It has a long history of falls, you know, trips and falls, okay, to where it finally had to come to, it finally came together in the 1700s, okay, which took 100 years or so. But in that time, they began to import and transport opium into China, and they destroyed China with opium addiction. Also, they were importing spices and so forth into England, into Europe, and they made a fortune there in sugar. Sugar was a tremendously large, very profitable item at that time. So the British East India Company transformed the politics in England unlike any other thing ever did before or nor after since then. And what it basically did was officials, high officials and managers of the British East India Company would retire back in England with fat fortunes, They were also fat, and they had fat fortunes. And they became the political, you could say, a nexus of political power and control in England. At first, many of the ministers of parliament, and so members of parliament, would look aghast at these opium fortunes, which they considered to be illegal and debilitating and destructive for the people that were on these addictive drugs. But when the money started pouring in, they became believers like, uh-oh, this is going to transform England, and these are the new powers and the rich of England. And boy, they got in bed with them quick. So that's basically what happened in England, is that the British East India Company transformed, okay, the politics of England from the landed rich into not only the landed rich, but the landed rich in partnership with the nouveau rich, which were these British East India Company former managers and so forth with vast fortunes to invest, and they started becoming partners, and it corrupted the virtual politics of England since then. But that's basically what happened at that time. And so what we have today is we have a very, very stratified, regimented, very pecking order England. And it's totally corrupt, but it's all about big money and big deals, big egos. If you go to Trafalgar Square and all these, they have great heroes of English history, and they're bigger. The statues are bigger than life, and it's just overwhelming. You need to go there sometime to England and begin to see what is really going on. Well, in addition to this big data that they have underway now with the $92 million American dollars in funding to get this thing under control, because the British are going to try to make inroads and try to establish themselves as the pros on big data and the real far advanced and way out ahead, a step ahead, but way out ahead of the rest of the world on providing the ability to gather, capture, and, you know, manipulate and process of this, all this data. But in addition, they've done something that's just as sinister, and that's they've established what they call over there conspiracy and democracy, history, political theory, and internet research. This is a Levin Hume funded project based at Cambridge University, and it's just these people are unbelievable. They come in there and they've got all these professors and all these research people, all these graduate students, and they're, you know, researching why we have all these conspiratorial people out here, and, you know, what's the basis of that? And it's undermining. Here's what they're coming. Here's the angle that they're coming at us with, and it's undermining legitimate. It's undermining the free democracies of the world. The Western democracies of the world are being undermined by these nutcases that are espousing all of these different conspiratorials, like the JFK. They went back there last year, you know, and started salvaging up, you know, the JFK, and started making fun of people that, like Jim Mars, he's really knowledgeable about JFK. But they started making fun of everybody that was into any kind of a facet, you know, of any of these differing, you know, and oh yeah, they threw cold water on Building 7. And they poo-pooed 9/11 truth, you know, people as being just nutcases out of their gourd, you know, totally off base and so forth. But that's something interesting. I'm going to put up these click-offs where you can go in there, and it's conspiracyanddemocracy.org, and it's out of England. It's out of Cambridge, and boy, that is a whoopee-whoopee-doo site. And they have these idea fairs and things like that, what they had over there a while back, where they're going to the mafia and conspiracy. Here's another one. Here are some of the events and how they're labeled. The Holocaust denial, a flat earth theory of a clear and present danger. Okay, conspiracy theories in France and Italy during Cold War and decolonization. Then we get in here, we got another American conspiracy theory, that would probably include the JFK and things like that. Anglo-American conservatism and transatlantic threat between world wars. Catholic internationalism and origins of the Atlantic Order. Is democracy conspiratorial? You know, this is another conspiracy film season. Okay? They're going to have a, this last month they had conspiracy film season. Okay? And they had all the different, the hidden agenda. Okay? Anyway, they're just trying to roll out an idea, see, that anyone that subscribes to these is just a nutcase deluxe, see? And that there's something really bad wrong with these people. And my gosh, we can't listen to them. And actually, these people that have subscribed to conspiracy theories are undermining, they're undermining democracy, see? So that's the angle. That's the thing to look for. And what we try to do on this program is we try to get you some knowledge and opinions out there and some insider information where you can start paying attention to some of this stuff and you can benefit from it. The essence of the whole system is one of mind wash, okay? And it's not easy to perceive. It's just like getting back to this Cass Sunstein's rollout or in launch of his book. The title of the book was Conspiracy Theories and Dangerous Ideas. So we have this creation of this Cambridge group on conspiracy, see, last year. Then all of a sudden this year in March, we have a rollout of this book, see. It's all cleverly orchestrated, it looks like to me. And it's maybe another conspiracy to undermine the conspiratorial, what I call scholars, see. I talk, who I refer to, I call people that have studied this for, and I've looked at this stuff for about 30 years myself, and I would consider myself on the scholar side of this conspiratorial study. We know people get together and conspire to do things to gain control and to further their business interests and so forth. So there's nothing, that's unknown about that. These people are trying to put a bad, lid, or not lid, but they're trying to put a bad onus on anyone that would entertain anything called in the conspiratorial research side of things. But there's a lot to be said for what's going on out here in the research area. And so this is the danger to them. The biggest danger that I see right now to them would be the 9/11 truth, which keeps rolling on, and we've got people out there that are not gonna give up on that thing. And basically the 9/11 truth would state basically that the 9/11 event was an inside job. And so they cannot, if that is the truth in the final analysis, and there's a lot of information and evidence pointing in that way, it would undermine totally their power base. And so that's why they're funding all of these multi-million dollar research projects at Cambridge. And that's why they're rolling out big data. And then that's why they're characterizing people that stand up for their rights out here on the bunny ranches as, domestic terrorists, see? Because, the more and the greater that it appears to be, that people are waking up, and we'll talk about that in just a second. Let's mention that briefly just right now. I first started beginning to notice, especially after the 9/11 event in New York City, that people had a hard time looking at information that was obviously clues about unraveling what went on there. And it puzzled me for a while, and I began to get interested in, you could say, the denial. You know, we know, okay, that it is a subject, denial is a subject that's real, okay? We're into denial about all kinds of things usually, okay? About the way that we are, you know, good, our good points. So we're flaunting them all the time. But we're into denial about our negatives. The things that we've done in the past, we'll lie about it. We'll ignore some of the things that we have done to others. Or if we'll selectively forget. So we have a selective memory there. See what I mean? About, you know, things. But it gets to be where we have to begin to come out of that state of denial and begin to see ourselves. See? And this is very, very difficult to do. And the old saying, know thyself, talks about this in essence. And I believe that's what it was about, see? When Socrates and those people used that to try to teach, they were saying this, that there is a natural propensity for us to be in denial about ourselves and about the truth. We want to assume and bend things and interpret things to favor ourselves. But also, does it not then get back to the ego state? See, this is the problem, see, that we have, that we continuously are confronting, see. We've got this ego state that, you know, we can't overcome because it begins to dominate us. So what I say in my, you know, lectures, in my speeches and on the air, is that we must try to manage the ego and not let it manage and dominate us. And I believe that when we begin to understand, and especially in men, men have a worse problem in this area than women. And in that state of ego, so to speak, we deny to ourselves, you know, about ourselves, somehow thinking at the time that we're doing this that we're protecting ourselves. We are protecting ourselves. But we're not protecting that core real self, we're protecting a false self, that ego state. The ego state has been nurtured from birth, shortly after birth onward, by family and institutions and individuals, to think of itself. We think of ourselves in a certain way. We have a certain idea about ourselves and who we are and what we stand for. And that may or may not be very accurate depending on how much into denial we are. And we're all into denial by some degree. So to attain an objective, yeah. It's not objectivism we're talking about here on this program, even though Ayn Rand had some important points to say. We're talking about becoming really objective through a system of forgiveness and forgetting and getting back to the real essence of ourselves, taking responsibility for our actions. And that's where this thing changes on us, is that When we don't do that and take responsibility, we're using excuses not to do that, see. So the essence of mind washing then are systems of control, propagandizing, all that. We're talking about ideas, see. And so there's a field system out here that we find ourselves within. And there's air surrounding it because that's what exists on this earth. Other planets may not have an atmosphere. We couldn't live there without it right now. So we find ourselves in this state of affairs. So what we must do is that we must be able to start perceiving and observing our thoughts. A thought is a sliver of light, a stream of light. A ribbon stream of light containing, say, a salt shaker that's sitting on a table. That's what, to me, that's an idea, see. Now, we come to, through learning and association of different objects and sizes and color and all that, and the way they taste and so forth, we come to learn what these objects are and what they're used for, salt for food, things like this, salt and pepper, whatever. So, But the essence of it is a system, a field system that we find ourselves in. But I won't get into that anymore because we've got so many other things to talk about tonight. We have something that's being put together in the Pacific Basin called the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. This is an ominous and has been kept away from our U.S. congressional members, both senators and representatives. They've guarded the real essence of the text. They've only released a little bit of it to different select few people. It's going to take and create a battering ram against nation states. It's going to take and manifest corporate power in the greatest, most ugly way that's imaginable, you know. And so that is the problem of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. They're talking now, just recently, they've announced recently, there's talks underway on internet, see, on how to manage the internet. And basically, we've seen a changeover of ICANN just recently. And the United States should have never relinquished control. That was a mistake. But we've seen relinquishing that control of ICANN. What we're going to see, the internet being managed more and more in the future. You know, as far as this Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement goes, that's what they want, by the corporate umbrella of companies. They meet every year at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. They're meeting many of the top leadership that's over and above those corporations. We're not talking about corporate members now necessarily. We'll be meeting next month, at the end of next month, between the 29th of May and the 1st of June in Copenhagen, Denmark. Now, we intend to be there. We've myself and Farrell Montgomery are producing an event over there, a symposium, and we've called it We the People Bilderberg.com. We the People Bilderberg.com is going to be kicked off over there. It's going to be a 2-day symposium, and what we're going to talk about, we've got about 12 different subjects to talk about there. And basically, what we're going to be talking about, it in a sense is what the Bilderberg Group is, the wealthiest group, one group that we've been able to identify that meets, okay, yearly, in different places in the world. Usually it's in Europe or it's in America. See, so they will be meeting in Copenhagen, is what they have announced. They haven't announced the exact site. We have the Marriott in downtown Copenhagen in there in our sites, and saying that's basically where they're going to be meeting, see. So we intend to be there and put together our own program, our own 2-day symposium. We're going to be talking about such things as the Fukushima Daiichi, continuing radiation, you know, contamination spill, a catastrophe that's ongoing. We're going to be talking about 9/11. We're going to be, and the implications for the future of that, and how all of these big movers and shakers and the elitists have used that to manage people and scare the hell out of people, and then get them, you could say motivated and organized towards this Islam threat, this jihadist threat, see. We're going to be talking about food, the GMO aspect of food, and 80-something percent or more of our corn in this country today is GMO corn. Number 5 is Panopticon, the surveillance grid. We're going to be talking about that. We're going to be having speakers that are unbelievable, have a grasp and an in-depth understanding in these different areas. I can't tell you everyone that is coming yet. We've had some confirmed, and then some are you know, we're waiting for commitment from them. So I can't tell you exactly the number of people that we have and exactly the number that have committed so far. But it's going to be a very, very good group of people, individuals. The delusion, educating into delusion. This is where I'm coming from a little bit. I may have a few things to say about what I call the new school, see. And I was thinking the other day, there's, you know, about writing a piece called the New High School in America, and I just might do that anyway. But that's not what I'm going to be talking about in Copenhagen. The environment, number 7. There's many issues about that, and topics to cover on that. You've got the two groups out there. You've got, when you talk about weather and climate change, you've got the global warming versus the global not warm and cold, freezing, you know, group. And so you've got them continually battling each other on those two fronts there. We might have a discussion, a debate, is what one of the ideas that's popped up here, on the global warming or on climate change or on the just the real, the sourcing of that information. Number 8, communication. We need to promote, and I think Glenn Greenwald and what's her name, Laura Noitras, just received, I believe, a special award, okay? And they didn't think they were going to let them gain entrance to the country. But they did let them in, you know. And so, they came in and were able to receive the award, you know. And it was Greenwald, yeah. It was Glenn Greenwald and Laura Potris. They did return to this country. They're working outside the country. I think Laura's working out in Germany, and I think Glenn Greenwald is down in Brazil, I believe. But they did allow them into the country to receive this award. So that's, you know, they were the ones that were given the information from Snowden, okay? And then they have been the two primary reporters that have been outing much of the information that the NSA definitely does not want out there. And in some cases, it has damaged some very, very secret techniques that, even in my opinion, and I'm not real knowledgeable on this, I spent a little time in Germany, West Germany, way back, but some of the techniques should not have been outed, period. It was just too important to continue to preserve some of the outstanding techniques that the NSA developed. Now, the problem with this thing, on the positive side, and that's where you've got a large following of liberals, and especially even conservatives, are saying that Snowden's revelations did reveal the domestic threat to American citizens. Now, that I'd have to agree with. And the NSA has no business doing anything and collecting anything and correlating anything in this country on anybody. That's my opinion. And so I'm definitely against the NSA operating in this country. And originally, their mission was limited just to and their authority to outside collection and so forth. But what they've done to get around there is that, like in England, we'll collect for the UK, and then the UK will collect for us in here. You know, they'll have all these different satellites feeding into big buildings. And so they've gotten around some of that like that. So they do have ways of circumventing some of these restrictions. See, and they've done it. And it's not good that they did it. But when we had the so-called Cold War, you know, I mean, I guess we had a real Cold War, didn't we? I mean, so a lot of this stuff is made-up stuff. Who knows, you know? But the Dulles brothers, they helped create some of that Cold War mania, see? And so, as a result, we had the Cold War. We had the arms build-up. We had the thousands of 5,000 ICBMs, nuclear-tipped. We had the big nuclear plants to supply the plutonium for the arms and all this build-up where it got crazy, see? But we need to settle down in this. Now we've got the Ukraine. And the Ukraine, I'm going to put up some other stuff that I received just recently from Tony Gosling over in England, in Bristol. And there are some click-offs there of some interviews that were done on Democracy Now! And so I'll have that up on this site, too, for you to see that. You can go in there right now and see that. those click-offs have been put up already. And so, but I'm anticipating maybe a few more that I might have missed, but we'll have some really good click-offs on that also. But the Ukraine alone, it's getting to be where this World War III, verbiage and language is becoming more prevalent. I'm not very happy in hearing that, see, because do certain individuals want something like that? Is the money thing the overhang of the derivatives market? Is it that big to where these men that have run up these big losses and these large corporations, do they want a war? Do they think that they can hide all this derivative trading losses and organize everything? When you have a war, then you can, you're under martial law, you're under military command, see? And so a lot of things can be changed, and a lot of research and investigative reporting will go by the wayside. It won't happen. So we've got to be very, very careful in our analyses of what's going on today. We've got more internet, and I see now there's a Roots Action site. We'll have that site up too. I haven't put that one up yet, but it's called Roots Action, and these sites are just popping up. And you can tell that the people that are on there were liberal Democrats and probably voted for Obama, and now they're uncovering and exposing him. Joseph Farrar has done some wonderful work. Alex Jones, Gary Aldridge, and UT. Oh, today, Joseph Farrar said on Alex Jones' show that on this document out from the Clinton Library, Presidential Library, he's got one that had 331 pages in it. And all they've released is one with about 28 pages. And that's the one you'll be able to download off of our site today. So it so happens that Joseph Farrar has one with 331 pages in it. Man, he must have the full boat there, document. And that's fantastic if he does, because then we might be able to get, a better view of what's going on. So, let me get back to some other news here. So, big data, we covered that. Okay, now, there's a site here on the web called globalresearch.ca, and that stands for Canada, okay? That's globalresearch.ca, and that stands for Canada. And it is just a wonderful site. They've got all kinds of articles written by some very, very well informed people. Okay, remaking the Middle East, the American Gulag, crimes against peace, historic class action lawsuit against George W. Bush, privatization of water as an owned commodity rather than a universal human right, nuclear warfare in the Cold War, feature articles. This is some of the Senate report confirms ethical breaches of health professionals and CIA torture program. Boy, what title is that? Okay, here's an important one right here. Killing net neutrality, new law to create corporate control toll roads on the internet. See? So they're gonna take, and what's coming out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement is a greater control through charging or knocking off. There are reports that they might knock off whole families that are on there that are considered to be like conspiratorial or, obstructionist, obstinate type obstructionist, people. They've got even new, disorder programs lined up, with that kind of language in there, you see. But anyway, criminal investigation of the Nobel Peace Prize. Oligarchs are U.S. Unelected Kiev regime begins killing spree in eastern Ukraine. I mean, they go through the gamut here on, topics and so forth. That's why it's an interesting site, and I recommend it. I highly recommend that you go in and look at that site. There's other things going on too, on this Roots Action Connect, okay? And it's on the labor left, you know, but the people are still, you know, they still care about, they call it human rights, okay? Here's one on Roots Action, reinstate Edward Snowden's passport, see? So they're right on top of this. And then also, there was an action event, with Colleen Rowley. I've interviewed her. Ray McGovern interviewed him, and they were discussing, surveillance. So go in there and watch that, video. It's excellent. And it's called RootsAction, .org. And, you know, I'm beginning to reach across the aisle and just saying, well, whoever has some really good truth, step forward and, let's talk about it, you know? I mean, it doesn't matter if you're left, right, or whatever. I do not subscribe to a leftist collectivist state. What I see happening, and you gotta go back to the Fabian Society and all that stuff, you know? But what's happening is that the very wealthy have been in control of bringing us a communist state worldwide all the time. But they're operating much more like a fascist type of art capstone at the top, you know, manipulating everybody through the secret societies and the mystery school religions and all that other stuff, see. And then at the bottom, they're going to put us on programs, you know what I mean? Like, you'll have to sign up. It's like the Obama thing where you have to give them all your information and they'll start taking money out of your account and you might even have a lien against you or you might have a judgment or something. But they're going to be good for you. You know what I mean? They're going to be good for you. And another thing too is that they have a program over there. Like these regimes, in Denmark, as I understand, about, you know, you earn a certain amount of money and you get to take it home and keep it, about 20% of it in the end. The estimates over there by different people I've talked to saying the taxes are up to 80% of your income. Over about 55,000, I think the tax rate is 60%. See, so, I mean, there's all kinds of hidden taxes. There's, value added. There's VAX taxes over there in Europe. And, you know, I reviewed a video just recently and some young person is showing a person down the streets of Copenhagen and he's saying to this older person, he said, oh yes, he said, anybody can go to the university. It's free. It's all free. And the guy says, doesn't someone pay for that? He said, oh yeah, I guess so. And he said, well, isn't that called socialism? I guess it is, but man, it's great. You know, it's great. You pay 80% of your income, you know, and, you know, everybody has free education. Okay? It's so great, isn't it? But you're looking to big government to give you the go-ahead on who goes to the university and who doesn't. The people that are resistors, that are against big government or harsh government or repressive government or corrupt government aren't going to go to university. So what they've got now in this country is they're beginning to, and the blacks were left out and the Hispanics early on. And, that was not right, see. Because the big money operated in that way, see, in Texas especially. And it wasn't right the way the Hispanics and the blacks were treated in this state in the 20th century. They were not given, opportunity, for loans and things like that. And I've never discriminated against any Hispanic or black in my life. And I've never denied them their rights or anything else. And, I've never hardly ever used that N-word, period. I was raised in a period where our football heroes were black players and we cheered them on. In Austin, I went to William B. Travis High School. And so at this school, William Barrett Travis was the commander of the Alamo. So it had a history and a tradition of Texas Revolution. And so here we had blacks playing and scoring the touchdowns and doing all the fine things that excellent players do. The Shaw brothers, the Shaws, you know. Hey, how you doing? They were friendly. We liked them. We thought a lot about them. And, you know, that's the way it was, here in Austin, Texas, back during that era, you know. Now, let's get back to this, Snowden thing a little bit, okay? Greenwald, Glenn Greenwald, and Lauren Poitras did receive this award, this journalism award, and they were not arrested. So that's they're saying in this article, in this Salon article, that the reason why there might be blowback or something, but some have speculated that there would be too much backlash against the Obama administration were they to attempt to indict Greenwald or Poitras, who has faced intensive hours. Oh, there, this article, go in there and read this, because it shows what hell that little lady Laura went through in airports and everything else. She had to finally go public with some article or some program that outed all the hell that she was being given, and then they laid off of her. But there was no, you know, reason why they should have bothered her at all. But they did it because she was part of the Snowden release of information that the United States government, the federal government, did not want. And as a result, they thwarted her freedom of movement and interrogated her wherever she went and so forth. And I know it's not right, never has been right. So let's try to look at, get back to a little quick summary here, is that let's try to reach across the aisle, whether it's to Bundy's Ranch people or to the so-called Patriot group and whatever, let's try to get a little bit better insight into 9/11 truth. The psychology there is what I didn't say enough about. We've got to come out of this state of denial. We've got to awaken, okay, to a better way of being and living and existing. And then we might be able to do something someday, see, and become somebody, you know. But in this state of denial that we find ourselves, we're never going to come out of it until we can begin to see ourselves and the mechanisms that will continue that state of denial. We're rebuilding the Secret Truth website. We're going in with a WordPress site. So we still have, if you go to thesecrettruth.com, you'll come into our new WordPress site WordPress there. And just click on down there where it says go to the old site, and that'll take you. We're not going to ever take down any of our sites that we've had up these nearly eight years. So you're going to be able to see and find the information that we still have there on those sites. The more current stuff will be reflected on the WordPress, this new WordPress site. So anyway, then you can go in there and it'll be easier to move around in. But you'll still be able to access each and every one of the older sites that we had. And I know some of them don't look that good, but at least we're going to leave them there so people can be able to find stuff more easily. Now, on our new site, it'll even be much easier to find the archives that we've written. Charlotte and I have written probably 20-25 articles for Genesis Communication Network. When we had we helped Woodhouse kick off that editorial area up there in Minnesota. So we'll have those up also, and we'll have all of our programs up in archive form also, so you'll be able to listen to those. And we'll have them, you know, where you can scan them and get them by topic or by date and so forth, so you'll be able to really understand what we've done over these 8 years. But I want to thank each and every one of you listening out there, and I want to say I want to bless each and every one of you for trying to do the right thing. And we just can't give up on this country. We're losing the country very, very quickly. We're under assault by a lot of bad ideas and by a lot of bad and lies. And that 9/11 is the biggest lie there ever was. It's trying to bring us down into a police state. We must stand up and seek the truth on that for sure. Thank you very much for listening tonight. We'll be back next weekend. Same time, same station. Good night.